You're listening to the audio message of the Sunday service of The Gathering QC, a local church that meets at 3928 12th Avenue in Moline, Illinois. You can also find us on the web at thegatheringqc.com.
We are starting a new short series as we're heading toward Easter. And so we'll be talking about that after this series. But this series is on relationships, life-giving relationships. And so we're excited about that. Now, the sermon today, the title is Me, Myself, and I. Yes, it's still about relationships, okay? Have you ever, you know, felt like it's about me, myself, and I? I remember... It was several years ago now, one of my first mission trips. I was assigned to go to Haiti. I told someone I wanted to go to where I could work with poverty. I wanted to see, you know, work with children. And they said, we're going to send you to Haiti. And I thought I was a pretty good leader at that point. We assembled a team. I thought we knew what we were going to do, how we were going to get there. And we flew into Port-au-Prince. And I knew that we were going to go to Loganov. And on Loganov, and I've told this story a few places, maybe you're already tracking, to Loganov on the plane called MAF. And I thought, wonderful, we'll land from American Airlines, and we will get on MAF, and we will fly over to Loganov. Well, what I didn't know was that MAF is like a two-propeller prop job with six seats. And so when I knew that something was different when we were standing there, and before they put us on the plane, this little 15-year-old boy brought out bath scales and started weighing us. This was when you realized that you were not on American Airlines any longer. So he said, pick up your suitcase and everyone weigh, and he said, because I have to sit you on the side of the plane so that the plane is perfectly balanced. And the team is looking at me like, you never told us anything about that. And I'm like, I didn't know. And so he says, okay, it's time to get on your plane. And there was a series of, I remember, yellow planes that looked like what we used to fly here, you know, 20, 30 seaters that were kind of, and he walked us around those yellow planes, this little 15-year-old boy, and then he went around the corner, and then there's this little plane about the size of this stage sitting there. He says, this is your plane. And the team was looking at me, and I remember he set us in. There's only four of us could go at a time. We had to take two planes. So we put luggage and four, and I sat right behind the pilot. And I remember him looking in at me and telling me as they're getting ready to close the door. First of all, I thought this little 15-year-old was going to be our pilot. And I'm like, I'm bailing out But then he said, the pilot will be with you in just a moment. And he said, he looked at me and he said, now the first aid kit is under your seat. Now, we're flying over the bay, over completely over. So he said, now, if the plane goes down, you are responsible for the first aid kit. And then he closed the door. And the whole team, there was probably like 2 minutes before the pilot came out. And nobody said a word. We just sat there. And finally, I spoke up, and it was something like this. I said, team, I want you to know that if this plane goes down, it is every man for himself. I am not getting this first aid kit out. I don't care what you do. I'm going to crawl over you if I have to, but I am getting out of this plane. How many of you ever felt like that it's a little bit like every man for himself? We kind of get this individual attitude to where sometimes, you know, we feel like we're going it alone. Well, we're going to talk about relationships. And so today it's about me, myself, and I. It's about taking care of me so that I can be involved in a healthy relationship. Genesis 1 and 2, God created man and woman, Adam and Eve. Adam was created first, and then God said, it is not good for this man to be alone. Some of you ladies are snickering. So he created Eve. We find in this foundational story the foundation for relationships. First, there is God, a self-sustained God, but yet he shows his relational DNA because he created humankind to love and enable us to flourish. So first, there was a relationship with God. And then God created Adam, a fully developed person, but he was designed to be in relationship with Eve. God created Eve, a fully developed person, but designed to be in a relationship with Adam. Each their own person, but designed for relationship with others and designed, if we're going to be who we're called to be, in relationship with God. Yet something inside of Adam and Eve is restless. They decide that they could break ties with God's design. They wanted to be independent of God's rules. They disobeyed, and when they disobeyed, they fractured the trust that God had placed in them. And also, the relationship between Adam and Eve was fractured. You remember when God calls them out in the garden, begins talking to them, they start blaming one another for what happened when God questions them. So they lost this good gig they had in the garden. And their own inner desires, their own restlessness within themselves caused them to be susceptible to the devil's temptation. And out of their hearts developed fractured relationships. So we're going to talk about the link between being a whole person before we walk into relationships. This is true. I know you're not going to think. This is true, what I'm about to say. I read this week from the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology Journal. I know, you probably got your latest issue as like I did. It's the link between self-esteem and social relationships, a meta-analysis of longitudinal studies. I had to read it. It's gripping, just the title, right? But what they actually studied, this recent study, was that they said it's the long-standing assumption that social relationships play a key role in developing individuals' identity and self-esteem. So individuals and relationships do. But they said it had been very poorly studied, and so this study shows that it suggests that a healthy sense of oneself identity also leads to improvement in a person's social relationships. So a better sense of self and self-identity and self-esteem leads to better relationships, just like those outer relationships also focus and help us to be better people. So we're going to look at a passage in Scripture of someone that was trying to find themselves, someone that was struggling with their self-identity. It's called the parable of the prodigal son. Now, I'm using this parable because it is a wonderful story. We often think of it in different ways, but I'm going to use it as a metaphor for relationships. So here's how the story goes. You've probably heard it, but let's read it so we can get our minds around it again. Luke 15, beginning with verse 11. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons, and the younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had. He set off for a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was a long way off, his father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and let's celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, but yet he is alive again. He was lost and now is found.' So they began to celebrate. Now, meanwhile, the older son was in the field, and he came home near the house. He heard the music and the dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he said, 'and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. So he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. My son, the father said, you have always been with me and everything I have is yours. But we have to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he is found. We read this passage a lot to talk about being spiritually lost, someone walking away, being sinful, and then coming back to God. And that is all true. That's all part of the point of God the Father that welcomes us back home. But there's also a lot here more for us. It speaks to all of us who are trying to decide who we are, who will we become, and what we're going to make of the relationships that we have. So the first point I want to make is a little section called, I've Got to Be Me, or We. It says here that the guy, young son, takes his inheritance and says, Father, give me my share. He takes it and he leaves. This parable is about a young son that decides it's time to discover himself. He's looking for his own identity. I've just got to be me. Was it Sammy Davis Jr.? I know everyone under 30 will remember that song, right? No. So he's on a goal to find himself. Klein Snodgrass says this, what is identity? Who are you? Identity drives life. It provides the energy and motivation for all else. It is the well from which life is directed and sustained. If you know who you are, you know what you must do. And if your identity is healthy, it provides a confidence that enables action. Self-identity. Who are you? Who are you striving to be and become? So if self-identity is important, and if a healthy sense of self, does it mean that it's just me, myself, and I? Is it all about me? Does it lead to the conclusion that I can live in isolation from others? Does it mean I can live in a self-focused and selfish manner? Do what I want in order to get what I want? Is it all about my feelings and my desires that matter? Miroslav Volf says this. He's a wonderful evangelical theologian that wrote, he comes from Croatia and was raised in Serbia. He witnessed firsthand the destruction during the Balkan Wars, a bloody time of violence in the former Yugoslavia, where ethnic divisions caused massive violence and war and even ethnic cleansing. He saw what selfishness and self-focused and isolation that turned broken relationships into even violence. And he actually says this, that there's a philosopher that says that many times we take this parable and we can use it to say, I've just got to be me, that I've got to be independent. He says this typically modern way of reading the desire of the younger son to receive an inheritance, to leave home, is to see him breaking out of the confines of this patriarchal home in order to find his authentic self and become an individual. Departure in this modern world is not a transgression. On the contrary, the one that stays in the world that his family orders is a bad individual who is not being authentic to themselves. In other words, you've always got to keep moving and leaving in order to find yourself. That's the modern way that this parable can be read. We live in that world that celebrates our individuality, that celebrates when we leave to become our own person. And it's not a bad thing that we have to make our own choices. However, it does not take into account of how much of the world before us define themselves, not so much by I, but by we. The world that the parable was told in was much more relational. So this modern reading of the self, that we should celebrate this young man that's trying to find himself, doesn't really get to the point of the story. Read through the lens of the first century social structures, the son has already transgressed by demanding his inheritance. He's declaring his father as good as dead, and he desires nothing to do with home. He undercuts his whole household solidarity, which was so important to the family. He cuts himself off completely from relations with his father and his brother. He sets up a breach from his family that was total. It says that he gathered all he had and even went to a distant country. It wasn't enough to go to Geneseo. He had to get out of here. The project that this is describing, the son's project was to unson himself, to unrelate himself. You see, many translations use this story. They use it as the parable, not of the prodigal, but the parable of the lost son. There's three parables in a row. First in Luke 15, 1 through 17 is the parable of the lost sheep. And then right after that is the parable of the lost coin. And then after that is the prodigal son or the lost son. The son is not just lost to the father, but he's lost to himself. He has lost who he is. He tries to unson himself, unconnect himself, unrelate himself. He's lost his self-identity, and he causes himself to distance from people that are closest to him. And now he thinks he's made a brilliant move, only to find out that he's made it much worse. You see, the bottom line is that God created us as individuals, but necessarily to design not just to be an I, but to be a part of a we. We do have our own self-sufficiency, but it's in order that we can connect ourselves. And we need to be as healthy of an I as we can be to have healthy relationships. The goal is to be self-secure without becoming solitary. And in order to do that, we need purpose. We need to be secure in who we're called to be in the direction of our lives. We need conviction that we have beliefs and morals that give us stability. We need love. Not only have we found our place in the love of God and in the love of others, but we can allow love to flow out of us. In order to be self-secure, we need healing because we all get bumps and bruises, don't we, from whatever it is in our life, and we need to be healed from the hurts and disappointment. We need forgiveness to give it and receive it because we all will be wronged at some point, and we need to be quick to forgive so that anger and bitterness does not set up. We all need to make better choices if we come into maturity and we start listening to the Spirit about who He's calling us to be. Your key relationship is to be a whole person, healthy, put together person that God wants you to be, and so that you can bring that healthy person into the relationship. Be a healthy I so that we can be a part of a healthy we. Klein Snodgrass says this in Who God Says I Am, a wonderful little book. He talks about making the choices as you mature in order to be a healthy I. He says, it's a little bit of a long reading, but I like it. This is what he says. You deserve the chance to make an honest and critical analysis of yourself and choose with an honest executive self to be who you should be. You deserve to be the real you. Here is the really crucial point. You do choose yourself, even though if it is only in the context of the givens of your life. Yes, there is a huge debate about your ability to choose, the limits of your ability to choose that's caused by sin and hardwiring and other people's sins and abilities, but still, you do get to choose yourself. You do not choose to be born, your family of origin, or where you were born, but you do choose if you will stay where you are born and how you will handle relationships, even messy family relations. You choose whether you will be honest with yourself about yourself in order to become what you should be. You choose whether you will be honest about this and examine the society which you're part. You choose to accept or reject illusion. You choose whether you will live the unexamined life. You choose whether you will take responsibility for your actions. You choose how you will handle your urges and your desires, especially your anger and your sexuality. You choose whether you will give attention to and love God and God's will, or whether you will ignore God's intent for your life and will go your own way. You choose how and where you will invest yourself and what interest you will pursue, whether your life will focus on only really important issues and relations or on temporary pleasure. You choose whether you will be self-centered. You choose whether you will invest in your own learning and hold yourself accountable for learning. You choose the people that you will allow to be models and mentors in your life. You choose you will have goodwill toward people, or even if they don't deserve it. You choose how you will react to injustice. You choose whether you will live with a sense of entitlement and privilege so that you do not function with any sense of justice or fairness. You choose whether you blame other people for your failures and all that is wrong in life. You choose how you treat people. You choose what kinds of attitudes characterize your life. You choose how you will steward your body and to what kinds of abuses and dangers you expose it to. You choose the communities, at least some of them, that you allow to tell them who you are and that will be formative in shaping you. So, in essence, is God present in your choices? It's a long passage, but there's a lot of choices that we make that we need to bring God right in the middle. How are we choosing to be what God wants us to be? Open, honest, in a healthy way so that we will be open to healthy relationships. So, I, me, and we. Now, the second point is that a whole me leads to a better we. A whole me leads to a better we. That's already what we've been talking about. In this parable, it says that this young man takes all that he has and leaves. This is a story of a restless, solitary young man who decides to unson himself. He decides to unrelate himself to his father. He thought through disconnection that it was a way to find himself. He would get a better self-identity. He thought through a change of place that he would have a better place to grow. And often we run from places and people because we're dissatisfied with ourselves. He thought that money and fun would bring him a distraction. So he went about with wild living. And we can develop addictions in our life that give us a temporary thrill or that will numb us. But he found that none of these kinds of disconnections brought him to the self-identity that he so deeply wanted. We don't know what caused him to be so restless in life or what it took to bring him to this unhealthy stretch of disconnection. It could be just a time of youthful immaturity. We don't know. But I do know that we can do the same things. We can try to unrelate ourselves. Why do we do it? How do we do it? I've learned that it's easy to be emotionally withdrawn from people. Without even leaving someone, you can so become so withdrawn that you're not present with them. We unrelate ourselves sometimes when we're hurt by others, and it brings us to anger or it brings us to hurt so that we push other people away. Maybe it's unforgiveness that holds us and the people that wronged us hostage so that we're not able to open our arms to someone else. Or maybe it's the sense of lies that the devil tells us, that our own self of self-worth is so bad that we don't feel capable of bringing anything good into a relationship, and so we stay at a distance. We don't know what happened to this young man, what it was that caused this disconnection, but he had to relearn the sense of what it was to open himself up back to a relationship with the Father. That's what we have to learn, that a whole me brings into a better we, into better relationships. Miroslav Volf, the same theologian, calls this the drama of embrace. Discovering the power of who we are enough so that we can open our arms to another, make ourselves vulnerable enough, feel self-confident that we don't lose ourselves in someone else or we don't distance ourselves from someone else, but we open ourselves and our lives so that we can have healthy, authentic relationships. It's called the doctrine of embrace, the drama of embrace. Lindsay is going to help me. I thought real hard, who's going to let me hug them in this congregation? Probably should be Kathy or Lindsay would be my guess. Wouldn't that be awkward if I just called a volunteer? Just anyone. Come on up here. We're going to, and the book is not an easy read, but he has some brilliant things to talk about how through hurt, it starts off with any embrace is an opening of the arms. He says this, open arms are a gesture of the body that's reaching out for the other. It's a sign of discontent with my own self-enclosed identity. It's a code that I need others. I do not want to be myself only. I want the other to be part of who I am, and I don't want the pain of being alone. So open arms is welcoming the joy of another anticipated presence. Open arms suggests that I've created space for myself and for the other to come in. Opening the arms removes the boundaries, and it creates that space for others to get close to us. And so when I come and I do this, it invites. It's an invitation that I'm open. And the point is that with hurt and with unforgiveness, and when we're unhealthy and unwhole, we have the tendency to take this stance. We cross our arms. We're self-enclosed. We're self-absorbed. And we give the air that we're not open. When we're hurt, when we're wounded, that's often what happens. Instead of opening the arms, we close the arms. Now, the second stage, if we're in healthy state, or where we're able to open the arms, is waiting. See, after the opening the arms, the self must wait for the arms of the other. We halt at the boundary of the other. For the arms of the other. The other should not be coerced or manipulated. If I just went, hey, Lindsay, how are you? But he says that many times when people are wounded, they cling to other people. They lose their sense of self-worth so that now they manipulate or they coerce or they overpower in relationships or they cling in relationships so that it's a sense of not waiting, not welcoming and waiting, but instead manipulating and coercing and sometimes in anger just swallowing up people. But then Act 3 is the closing of the arms. By closing our arms, we've made space for each other. And proper embrace does not allow the closing of the arms too tightly, so to crunch or to assimilate the other. I chose Lindsay because she's my most unhuggable child. I'm just teasing. I always tease her because I'm always hugging on her. She's like, Dad. Bad, turn loose on me. So here's how it works. We open my arms, I wait, and then when it's proper, we come. We don't do the bear hug, which is what I do. That's the reason she doesn't like hugging me, because I'm always goofing on her. But the closing of the arms, in relationships where people are not whole, they can squeeze too tightly. Or they can demand that I hold on, that you become assimilated with someone else. You become so attached that you lose your self-identity and it only becomes attached to someone else. All kinds of things that can happen if you don't, if you close the arms improperly. And then Act 4 is you open the arms again. By separating again, we recognize the boundaries of each other. We do not demand that the other becomes a part of who I am or just like me in order to be received, nor do I lose myself in the other. But we're both blessed with this drama of opening and invitational and welcome into a whole healthy relationship. Can we try it again?
Sure.
All right. I'll do it right this time. Here we go. Thank you. I actually thought about what guy could I get up here so we could do the guy hug. You see, this relationship, this kind of relationship, requires a whole self that offers himself in a healthy way to others. Not whole people lose themselves in other people, or they demand that they stay embraced and so close and so much in contact, and they demand that people are just like them. There's so many spinoffs of this. But in order to become healthy and have healthy relationships, it's good to be self-aware of the welcome that we extend to other people. And then the third and the final thing I want to say is just about becoming more like myself. It says in verse 17, when he came to his senses. Or another translation says, when he comes to himself. It's a transformation of thinking. There comes a time when you have to come to your senses. You have to realize this is not who I am designed to be, that I have a choice to make. There comes a time when you can decide to become more like God designed us to be, where we have the full capacity to be who we are in a healthy way. and the capacity then to relate to others in a healthy way. It says he comes to his senses, or he comes to himself. He realized that he was not whole. He realized he was not healthy. He realized that he was living in a distant land that did not make him happy or whole, that he could not be a solitary self, but he needed the connections of other people. He gets it. He confesses his mistake, and he goes back home. Now, the end of the story is that after he confesses, his father pulls him up and he collapses into the arms, the waiting, loving arms of the father that welcomes him back home, back into the father's embrace. The father all along had been looking for him and longing for him and waiting for that moment. Instead of scolding and arms folded, and the father had his arms open the whole time, and finally the embrace meets. And we find that a healthier sense of self between the two of them make for a relationship that's put back together. So we've been talking about a lot about being self-aware and evaluating ourselves. And so the more whole, the more healed we can become, the more whole our relationships can be. How do I become more like myself? Like the son, how do I come to myself and realize that it's time to go home? It's time to understand myself better so that I can relate to. Let me just make a few suggestions before we close. The first one is take care of yourself. Now, that sounds counterintuitive. We're talking about relationships. But again, in order to be whole and healed, you have to take care of yourself. Get the rest you need. Pay attention to your emotions. Watch your mental health. Watch your stress levels. I watch so many people, I've been there before, where the work stress hurts relationships. Watch it. You got to take care of yourself, because the way that your self-identity and the stresses and that you have will be brought into relationships. So take care of yourself physically, mentally. The second one is feed yourself spiritually. Always stay spiritually high, prayerful, listening to God, connecting with others in spiritual groups and in spiritual conversation. Make good choices. Listen to God. But the last and the final thing is become fully and pursue fully what God desired you to be and designed you to be. Recognize that if we're going to have healthy relationships, that love has to flow through us, and that love comes from God. That you are a person that is loved and created and blessed and significant and purposed, that you are gifted, that you're a part of the body of Christ, that you've been given a mission by God to serve him and to love him and to bless others. Become what God designed you to be. And as you become that, as you take care of your body and your mind and your spirit, then the stronger me will be more whole for the we. And so again, it's another week of where we look at ourselves and pray, God, if there's anything that's hurting me, that I'm angry about, that I'm unforgiven about, or that I've picked up my stuff and went to a distant country, and it's short-circuiting my relationships, then it's time for God to help us to be all that he's called us to be and to come back home.